Chapter 68. He looks very fierce. I am but a contributor, Dr. Swift, says Esmond, with the little boy still on his knee. He was sitting with his back in the window, so that the doctor could not see him. Who told you I was Dr. Swift? Says the doctor, eyeing the other very haughtily. Your reverence's valet bawled out your name, says the colonel. I should judge you brought him from Ireland? And pray, sir, what right have you to judge whether my servant came from Ireland or no? I want to speak with your employer, Mr. Leach. I'll thank ye go fetch him. Where's your papa, Tommy? Asks the colonel of the child, a smutty little wretch in a frock. Instead of answering, the child begins to cry. The doctor's appearance had no doubt frightened the poor little imp. Send that squalling little brat about his business, and do what I bid ye, sir, says the doctor. I must finish the picture first for Tommy, says the colonel, laughing. Here, Tommy, will you have your pander with whiskers or without? Whiskers, says Tommy, quite intent on the picture. Who the devil are ye, sir? Cries the doctor. Are ye a printer's man, or are ye not? He pronounced it like not. Your reverence needn't raise the devil to ask who I am, says Colonel Esmond. Did you ever hear of Dr. Faustus, little Tommy, or Friar Bacon, who invented gunpowder and set the Thames on fire? Mr. Swift turned quite red, almost purple. Did not intend any offense, sir, says he. I dare say, sir, you offended without meaning, says the other, dryly. Who are ye, sir? Do you know who I am, sir? You are one of the pack of Grub Street scribblers that my friend Mr. Secretary hath laid by the heels. How dare ye, sir, speak to me in this tone? Cries the doctor, in a great fume. I beg your honor's humble pardon, if I have offended your honor, says Esmond in a tone of great humility. Aether than be sent to the Compter, or be put in the pillory, there's nothing I wouldn't do. But Mrs. Leach, the printer's lady, told me to mind Tommy whilst she went for her husband to the tavern, and I daren't leave the child lest he should fall into the fire. But if your reverence will hold him, I take the little beast, says the doctor, starting back. I'm engaged to your betters, fellow. Tell Mr. Leach that when he makes an appointment with Dr. Swift he had best keep it, do ye hear? And keep a respectful tongue in your head, sir, when you address a person like me. I'm but a poor broken-down soldier, says the colonel, and I've seen better days, though I am forced now to turn my hand to writing. We can't help our fate, sir. You're the person that Mr. Leach hath spoken to me of, I presume. Have the goodness to speak civilly when you are spoken to, and tell Leach to call at my lodgings in Berry Street, and bring the papers with him tonight at 10 o'clock. And the next time you see me, you'll know me, and be civil, Mr. Kemp. Poor Kemp, who had been a lieutenant at the beginning of the war, and fallen into misfortune, was the writer of the postboy, and now took honest Mr. Leach's pay in place of Her Majesty's. Esmond had seen this gentleman, and a very ingenious, hard-working honest fellow he was, toiling to give bread to a great family, and watching up many a long winter night, to keep the wolf from his door. And Mr. St. John, who had liberty always on his tongue, had just sent a dozen of the opposition writers into prison, and one actually into the pillory, for what he called libels, but libels not half so violent as those writ on our side. With regard to this very piece of tyranny, Esmond had remonstrated strongly with the secretary, who laughed and said the rascals were served quite right, and told Esmond a joke of Swift's regarding the matter. Nay, more, this Irishman, when St. John was about to pardon a poor wretch condemned to death for rape, absolutely prevented the secretary from exercising this act of good nature, and boasted that he had had the man hanged. And great as the doctor's genius might be, and splendid his ability, Esmond for one would affect no love for him, and never desired to make his acquaintance. The doctor was at court every Sunday assiduously enough, a place the colonel frequented but rarely, though he had a great inducement, to go there in the person of a fair maid of honor of Her Majesty's, and the airs and patronage Mr. Swift gave himself, forgetting gentlemen of his country whom he knew perfectly, his loud talk at once insolent and servile, nay, perhaps his very intimacy with Lord Treasurer and the Secretary, who indulged all his freaks, and called him Jonathan, you may be sure, were remarked by many a person, of whom the proud priest himself took no note, during that time of his vanity and triumph. 'Twas but 3 days after the 15th of November, 1712, Esmond minds him well of the date, that he went by invitation to dine with his general, the foot of whose table he used to take on these festive occasions, as he had done at many a board, hard and plentiful, during the campaign. This was a great feast, and of the latter sort, the honest old gentleman loved to treat his friends splendidly. His Grace of Ormond, before he joined his army as Generalissimo, my Lord Viscount Bolingbroke, one of Her Majesty's Secretaries of State, my Lord Orkney, that had served with us abroad, being of the party. His Grace of Hamilton, Master of the Ordnance, and in whose honor the feast had been given, upon his approaching departure as ambassador to Paris, had sent an excuse to General Webb at 2 o'clock, but an hour before the dinner. Nothing but the most immediate business, His Grace said, should have prevented him having the pleasure of drinking a parting glass to the health of General Webb. His absence disappointed Esmond's old chief, who suffered much from his wounds besides, and though the company was grand, it was rather gloomy. St. John came last, and brought a friend with him, Colin, I'm sure, says my general, bowing very politely, my table hath always a place for Dr. Swift. Mr. Esmond went up to the doctor with a bow and a smile. Gave Dr. Swift's message, says he, to the printer. I hope he brought your pamphlet to your lodgings in time. Indeed, poor Leech had come to his house very soon after the doctor left it, being brought away rather tipsy from the tavern by his thrifty wife, and he talked of Cousin Swift in a maudlin way, though of course Mr. Esmond did not allude to this relationship. The doctor scowled, blushed, and was much confused, and said scarce a word during the whole of dinner. A very little stone will sometimes knock down these Goliaths of wit, and this one was often discomfited, when met by a man of any spirit. He took his place sulkily, put water in his wine, that the others drank plentifully, and scarce said a word. The talk was about the affairs of the day, or rather about persons than affairs. My Lady Marlborough's fury, her daughters in old clothes and mob caps looking out from their windows, and seeing the company pass to the drawing room, the gentleman usher's horror, when the Prince of Savoy was introduced to Her Majesty in a tie wig, no man out of a full-bottomed periwig ever having kissed the royal hand before, about the Mohicks and the damage they were doing, rushing through the town, killing, and murdering. Someone said the ill-omened face of Mohun had been seen at the theater the night before, and Macartney and Meredith with him. Meant to be a feast, the meeting, in spite of drink and talk, was as dismal as a funeral. Every topic started subsided into gloom. His Grace of Ormond went away, because the conversation got upon Denane, where we had been defeated in the last campaign. Esmond's general was affected at the allusion to this action too, for his comrade of Winendel, the Count of Nassau-Woudenborg, had been slain there. Mr. Swift, when Esmond pledged him, said he drank no wine, and took his hat from the peg and went away, beckoning my Lord Bolingbroke to follow him. But the other bade him take his chariot, and save his coach hire he had to speak with Colonel Esmond. And when the rest of the company withdrew to cards, these two remained behind in the dark. Bolingbroke always spoke freely, when he had drunk freely. His enemies could get any secret out of him in that condition. Women were even employed to ply him, and take his words down. I have heard, that my Lord Stair, 3 years after, when the secretary fled to France, and became the pretender's minister, got all the information he wanted by putting female spies over St. John in his cups. He spoke freely now. Onathan knows nothing of this for certain, though he suspects it, and by George, Webb will take an archbishopric, and Jonathan a no, damn Jonathan will take an archbishopric from James, I warrant me, gladly enough. Your duke hath the string of the whole matter in his hand, the secretary went on. He have that which will force Marlborough to keep his distance, and he goes out of London in a fortnight. Prior hath his business. He left me this morning, and mark me, Harry, should fate carry off our August, our beloved, our most gouty and plethoric queen, and defender of the faith, la bonne cause triomphe. A la sainte de la bonne cause. Everything good comes from France. Wine comes from France. Give us another bumper to the bonne cause. We drank it together. Will the bonne cause turn Protestant? Ask Mr. Esmond. No, hang it, says the other, he'll defend our faith as in duty bound, but he'll stick by his own. The hind and the panther shall run in the same car, by Jove. Righteousness and peace shall kiss each other. And we'll have Father Massillon, to walk down the aisle of St. Paul's, cheek by jowl with Dr. Sacheverell. Give us more wine. Here's a health to the bonne cause, kneeling damn, let's drink it kneeling. He was quite flushed and wild with wine as he was talking. And suppose, says Esmond, who always had this gloomy apprehension, the bonne cause should give us up to the French, as his father and uncle did before him? Give us up to the French. Starts up Bolingbroke. Is there any English gentleman that fears that? You who have seen Blenheim and Ramillies, afraid of the French. Your ancestors and mine, and brave old Webb's yonder, have met them in 100 fields, and our children will be ready to do the like. Who's he that wishes for more men from England? My cousin Westmoreland? Give us up to the French, saw. His uncle did, says Mr. Esmond. And what happened to his grandfather? Broke out St. John, filling out another bumper. Here's to the greatest monarch England ever saw. Here's to the Englishman that made a kingdom of her. Our great king came from Huntingdon, not Hanover. Our fathers didn't look for a Dutchman to rule us. Let him come, and we'll keep him, and we'll show him Whitehall. If he's a traitor, let us have him here to deal with him. And then there are spirits here as great as any that have gone before. There are men here that can look at danger in the face, and not be frightened at it. Traitor. Treason. What names are these to scare you and me? Are all Oliver's men dead, or his glorious name forgotten in 50 years? Are there no men equal to him, think you, as good as good? God save the king. And, if the monarchy fails us, God save the British Republic. He filled another great bumper, and tossed it up, and drained it wildly, just as the noise of rapid carriage wheels approaching was stopped at our door, and after a hurried knock and a moment's interval, Mr. Swift came into the hall, ran upstairs to the room we were dining in, and entered it with a perturbed face. St. John, excited with drink, was making some wild quotation out of Macbeth, but Swift stopped him. Drink no more, my lord, for God's sake, says he. Come with the most dreadful news. Is the queen dead? Cries out Bolingbroke, seizing on a water glass. No, Duke Hamilton is dead. He was murdered an hour ago by Mohun and Macartney. They had a quarrel this morning. They gave him not so much time as to write a letter. He went for a couple of his friends, and he is dead, and Mohun too, the bloody villain, who was set on him. They fought in Hyde Park just before sunset. The Duke killed Mohun, and Macartney came up and stabbed him, and the dog is fled. I have your chariot below. Send to every part of the country and apprehend that villain. Come to the Duke's house, and see if any life be left in him. Oh, Beatrix, Beatrix, thought Esmond, and here ends my poor girl's ambition. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.